this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back to Y'allitics. We are at an old favorite of ours, Oak Highlands Brewery.
It's one of our old haunts.
This is an old haunt, and it's they have a big A fan here.
Let me tell you,
always
what,
keeps it cool in here.
If you are hot, or if you are, you know, one
place
of these people who, you know, you want to go out in June, July, August to a brewery, this is your place to go. Their AC here doesn't play.
Not at all. Great Texas AC. Let's talk about what we're having here, man.
You may need that AC here in just a moment with your little breakfast and a cup that you've got
mine.
There.
Dude, yours, is this a beer or is this coffee?
It is a beer. It does look like a coffee. And
look how thick
I
this
sent
thing
myself
is.
A little note of what it is because I can't remember. It's called the DF Dub for, you know, DFW. It's a Dunkelweizen style ale.
I like the German accent you had there. That was good.
That was pretty good, wasn't it? And I'm told there's a lot of wheat in this.
So you can see it in the
pint glass. I'm feeling good about things.
I'm having the Golden Mustache. This is a German style lager, which you know, I like lager and pilsners.
What's in the little glass?
But I got the Texas Tornado as well, which has jalapeno, smoke, and bacon. It's what, barbecue in a glass? Is that what they said? Let's try it.
Sounds great. I don't know why I didn't get a full glass.
Oh my god!
Of that.
You can smell it. Just smell it.
You smell that. Oh yeah, it smells like a good breakfast burrito.
You should taste that, man. You can taste every bit of that.
I'm good. It sounds like it might cause
jalapeno
me heartburn.
Jalapeno and bacon. Yeah, you'll need a Prilosec, though, after having one of those.
This podcast sponsored by.
So, exactly. Prilosec, if you're listening. Hey, on this episode here, we are fortunate enough to have one of the first interviews. Not the first interview, but one of the first interviews.
It's going to be the best interview.
The longest and most in-depth, I think. With Kendall Scudder. He's the new chairman of the Texas Democratic Party. Kendall, this is kind of your old haunts too, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an East Dallas guy, so
yeah.
I'm just kind of tickled to be here.
We're not too far from it. What are you having?
So I also did the Golden Mustache. I have a thing that when I go into breweries and they have all these options,
right.
I have some preferences, but I just want to try all of them.
Yeah.
And so usually I just kind of have to pick one and go with it because otherwise it becomes a whole ordeal.
Yeah.
Well, you're
30 minutes later, you're still standing there waiting to order.
Well, you're way ahead of us here on this thing, man. We need to catch up.
I'm a pro.
Well, you've had a pretty whirlwind week, so I could see how you're tossing this back.
I needed a beer, but they also don't let you graduate from Sam Houston State University unless you know how to drink a couple, so...
let's start with the first basic question here. Why in the world do you want this job? The Democratic Party in this state is defeated, beaten down, and it's in the bottom of the barrel, I would say, right now. And some Democrats might argue with me, but I think you probably would recognize that's reality where you guys are. Why do you want this job?
I mean, look, we can either try to spin stuff and act like things are better than they are, or we can look in a mirror and own up to it and try to learn some lessons and get better. And the reason that I want it is because I think I'm a reformer. I'm the kind of guy, and this is why I won on the first ballot, which I'm sure we'll talk about, is that I have a reputation for being somebody that's not afraid to rethink our systems and kind of turn it on our head. I know the party really well, but I'm still not afraid to rethink it. And right now, Democrats have to understand that moment. You cannot put someone in charge of the party or steering it that thinks that the only problem is that we didn't have enough money. Mm. Because I can think of 2.5 billion reasons that that's not true, Kamala Harris, right? The issue isn't necessarily that we don't have a bunch of resources, which of course that's a problem. I mean, especially in the state party, but it's the way we're functioning, the way we operate, the way we message, how we choose to show up, where we choose to show up, that has to be completely rethought. I'm a guy from Deep East Texas. I grew up on a Purple Hole pea farm in Bowie County. I had to learn how to write with farm calluses on my hands, so I hold a pen weird, right? I view the world a little bit differently than how your stereotypical Democrat does. And at this moment, we have to have somebody like that that's willing to think outside of how we typically do things.
Well, my question is, where do you even begin? I mean, Republicans have had a trifecta in this state since 2003. They've had the House, the Senate, and the governor's mansion since 2003. That is a long time. So you look at this big apparatus. Congratulations on the win. But you walk in the front door. Where do you even begin?
Well, I mean, that's kind of what my week's been about, right? And trying to figure out how to build an efficient and a nimble organization. because Democrats, and I think really anybody that's involved in government, they tend to kind of saddle themselves with bureaucracy. And I'm a private sector guy. I want an organization that can move and be responsive and be helpful to people that are on the ground. So to me, you kind of take stock of where things are, and then we figure out what is the best way to start with building a grassroots apparatus in every part of the state. There are 40 mid-sized cities in the state of Texas that have over 100,000 people. And if you put them in any other state, they'd be a population center. Mm-hmm. But because it's Texas, they're considered rural, which is kind of weird. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Amarillo is not rural. Mm-hmm. Lubbock is not rural. Amarillo has 200,000 people in it. What's the party been doing there? We have some great county chairs that just started last year in Potter and Randall counties. What are we doing to resource them and to help them and to make sure they have the tools they need to succeed? And so, you know, places like Big Spring, Abilene, Tyler, Texarkana, Beaumont, I'm really interested in how we start building there. If we never even walk through the door and we never even tell people what we believe, then what Republicans say about us is taken as the gospel because they don't have any other information to go off of. And so I think people need to understand, and I hope that we can convey a party that Texans can see in the Democratic Party what I do. And, you know, I don't come from a family of means. I worked at a Dairy Queen and waited tables to put myself through a poor boys college. And it might as well have been Harvard for a kid like me. And, you know, I'm a Democrat because I don't see the Republican Party fighting for people like me. They just passed one of the largest tax increases on middle-class families, or not passed it. They're looking at these tariffs and push those through. They'll propose the largest tax increase on middle-class families that we've seen in my lifetime. Right now, they're passing these tariffs down. They're going to make things even more expensive for you to live. And the richest man in the world is sitting in the White House gouging social safety nets and firing people from the VA and doing it indiscriminately. They're not trying to figure out how to make your life easier.
But you talked about, you know, building grassroots, and we heard Beto O'Rourke talk about that. He talked about it in both of his campaigns. We've heard other Democrats talk about that, but it just hasn't happened over the years. I mean, you can look at the previous administrations and the TDP. You can look at candidates like Beto O'Rourke. What needs to physically happen to build that network all across rural Texas?
There's a difference between building that in a campaign and building it within the party apparatus. And what we as a party have depended on is some big savior at the top to raise a bunch of money and put an organization together, and then they're gone. Mm-hmm. And we don't have it anymore. There's not been a lot of coordination. It's like I said, efficiency should be important for us. So how do we do that in-house? How do we replicate what states like Wisconsin have been able to accomplish and states like Minnesota, Pennsylvania, so that when these campaigns end, we're still in the field and we're still operating in year-round operations, present in communities.
How do you do it
to be helpful? Well, I think that the way you do it is you have to build up an organizing team. And you split the state into regions and you don't lay off everybody when an election's over. Mm. And you run a strong data team that informs every department that we have to make things more efficient. And we raise a ton of money to make it happen at txdemocrats.org. That's to me the first steps of how to get that accomplished.
Wait, so you're saying you keep the staff on year round, you keep on plugging away even when there aren't campaigns going on, and you don't lay off everyone when the election is over? I think some people might be surprised to hear that's been the way it happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's typically been how the Democrats operate, is once a campaign's over, it's time to scale back.
Because the whole party.
The whole party. Yeah. And so, you get through an election. And that's why, you know, they're talking right now about Tarrant County Dems and what they're going through. That's just kind of what the Democrats have traditionally done, is after an election, they lay off their staff, and then they have to rebuild it all over again. And it just hasn't been an institution the way that I'd like to see it become, that people know that it is strong and that candidates know that we're going to be there for them. How do you recruit high quality candidates when they don't feel that they have a party apparatus that's going to be strong and able to support them?
But you're trying to get this plane off the ground. And my question is, how much runway do you sense you have right now? Because you're taking over former chair Gilberto Hinojosa stepped away after the last election and said, hey, you know, it's time for some new leadership here. So you're finishing out essentially his term. So you'd be up again in 2026 to run again for this. Got big elections coming up in 2026, including a big U.S. Senate seat here in Texas. How much runway do you have in front of you to ramp this thing up and actually, you know, make a difference?
I'm not your typical politician, right? And so for me, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about those political realities of like, how much time do you have to do it before people start getting nervous? To me, we are making haste. Like, you've got to operate quickly. We do not have any time. We should have been doing this months ago. We just had a 5-month runway on an election where this should have been happening. So since Saturday, I have done 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. days every single day, or 3 a.m., sorry, 7 a.m. to 3 a.m. days every single day since Saturday.
I was going to say, that sounded like Wheeler's schedule. I mean, that sounds pretty cush.
Except for the 7 a.m. part.
I'm exhausted. But it's the reality is there is no time to waste, and there needs to be a sense of urgency for every Democrat, not just to build an institution and apparatus, but because we're terrified of what's happening in our government right now and what it's going to mean for working people. And if you're going to go on the news and tell people that, act like it. People aren't seeing this level of urgency in the party that they want to. You know, they see Democrats just crying foul and saying, oh my gosh, we're so upset. Well, what are you doing about it? You know, so I'm wanting to show people it's a new day in the Texas Democratic Party. You just elected a millennial progressive to lead your party. And we're going to be operating with the understanding that that's what the people on the ground want. And if that works for me at the next convention, awesome. And if it doesn't, that's great. I'm going to roll up my sleeves and help the next folk.
What should people expect to see over the next 3 or 4 months, first 90 days from you?
You should see a Democratic Party that has more bite in it. You'll see a Democratic Party that doesn't just take punches, but throws them too. You're going to see a Democratic Party that is much more present in places where we typically haven't been, and that is willing to start making right some things where people on the ground have felt like we've fallen them short. And I think you're going to see a Democratic Party that really emphasizes and focuses in on what this broken, rigged economy looks like for working people. Our incomes aren't going up, but our bills are. Our energy bills, our insurance bills, interest rates on homes, our rent. It is hard. Life is already hard without having those types of economic realities. While that's all happening, billionaires and CEOs and corporations are having record profits. And that happens through worker exploitation. And our party is going to be making sure that we're amplifying that particular message.
Let me ask you about that, Kendall, because billionaires like Donald Trump have successfully stolen away the working class, I would say. From the Democratic Party. What is the Democratic Party not saying?
They have in elections, but they have also successfully killed the middle class. And so we as a party have gotten I think we got scared of the Donald Trump situation. We locked ourselves into preserving institutions. We were terrified of what could happen to this republic that we care so much about, and lost the guttural reactions of why people vote. Folks vote with their guts, not their heads, right? And so instead of leading with the idea that we're here to preserve institutions that have failed working people time and time again, we're going to talk about that from time to time as it makes sense. Maybe some of those institutions don't need to be preserved. What we're going to focus on is making sure that working people are the center of every discussion we're having, and how every bill we write, every bill we are able to get passed, everything we advocate for, how does it impact a person that's trying to put soccer cleats on their kiddo?
It sounds like you're saying that you need to hone the message, that, you know, Democratic values may be there, but the message hasn't been there. The closest a Democrat has come in eons was Beto O'Rourke back in 2018, running against Senator Cruz at the time. He seemed like he was able to hit that sort of message with people. He didn't get over the top, but he got close. Is that the sort of thing that you're talking about, doing, mirroring sort of what he did, where he went to every county in Texas, was present in all places, was talking to all kinds of people, and was trying to hone that message?
Yeah, I'll remind you, Beto O'Rourke is a young, progressive guy who showed up in places where people typically didn't. Yep. And sure, he fell short 2 points, but I mean, it was pretty remarkable what he was able to accomplish. Right now, Democrats across the country are overperforming about 11 points what the expectations are. If that's the case, even last election cycle that people say was catastrophic for Democrats in Texas, Colin Allred lost by 8. If we're overperforming by 11 across the board, Texas is in play in 2026, okay? And that's just math. And if that's the case, let's start now doing what Beto did in 2018, so that when our candidate comes in, whoever that may be, they have an apparatus that they can build on and they're not having to do it themselves. Imagine if Beto didn't have to reinvent the wheel. Hmm. You know?
Well, let's talk about Colin Allred for a moment, because you brought him up here. He's already talking about potentially running for U.S. Senate, this time against John Cornyn. It was, I think, almost 9 points, 8.5 points that he lost by. It's a heck of a lot more than what Beto O'Rourke lost by, the 2 points that he lost by. What more would Allred have to do, do you think, in order to win this seat? Because, the Cornyn-Paxton race, if that materializes, that thing's going to be a bloodbath.
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't want to be John Cornyn right now. Hmm. I'm operating under the assumption that John Cornyn will not be the Republican nominee. And even if he does, he's going to come out of very bruised, out of a bloody primary.
And if he's not the Republican nominee, Paxton is huge with the base. People show up in the state for Ken Paxton, for Republicans.
Ken Paxton's elections over the last few cycles have had much less money in them than the top of the ballot, and have been right there as close, because Texans don't like Ken Paxton. Okay?
You think Allred can defeat Paxton in a general election?
I'm not weighing in on who the nominee is going to be, because right. As the party, we facilitate primaries, and I don't want to comment on that. I don't know who the nominee will be. There'll be a primary system, and whoever that nominee is, I think that they are absolutely in contention to beat Ken Paxton in 2026. But I think it's the best pickup opportunity that Democrats have had probably in the last 25 years.
Come on, Kendall, we've heard this before.
I know, but I wasn't in charge then.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Do you consider it a gift, though, if Paxton does get into this race?
I think that...
And let Republicans just battle it out.
You don't have to worry
out.
About who the Republican nominee is. You're not... Yeah.
I think that both Cornyn and Paxton have terrible track records. But Paxton's is worse, objectively, right? I mean, the guy was indicted by his own colleagues because he's just a nefarious guy who puts his own self-interest above the people of Texas. And so, I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, that's obvious. If Ken Paxton is their nominee there, I think that we get a fun brawl. Mm-hmm. But I think Republicans want that brawl. We kind of want it too. it's exciting, and it draws this real contrast of where we want the state to go.
Well, let me ask you this. One of the biggest problems that I've seen in 25 years with the Democratic Party in this state is the trouble for attracting A-list candidates. Beto O'Rourke was, I would argue Colin Allred was, but in the past, a lot of these statewide offices just haven't been filled with A-list candidates, I would argue. How do you get those people out there, or how do you find those sleepers that can turn into an A-list?
I'd argue that you just listed some very recent A-list candidates.
Those two, but look back over the time. I mean, who else?
I think
really
Whitney Davis was an A-list candidate. I think the party's done a pretty good job of we've had some great candidates there, right? The question is, have we been there to support them? Has their messaging been on point? Has the state or the electoral environment been in a position where it made a lot of sense? You know, I mean, there's a lot of factors at play. Yeah. So I don't want to denigrate anybody that's been running. But what I will say is, moving forward, I think that you could end up, we have a lot of talent around this state, a big bench, not only of elected officials, but of grassroots talent.
Yeah.
You don't have to pull people from an elected office to make them a high quality candidate. And so we're rethinking the way we operate. It's a new day in the Texas Democratic Party.
Talk a little bit about, trying to be in all places at once. You know, you spoke about these 40 cities in Texas that have more than 100,000 people. Everyone knows that it's that triangle, though, these major cities, Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, where you really can juice turnout if you can get people to head to the polls. And Democrats haven't been able to mobilize that group and overcome Republicans in elections. How do you mobilize people in those big cities, and how do you win back parts of the valley that went surprisingly red? I mean, the valley just swung like crazy in this last election. That used to be a Democratic stronghold. How do you get that back?
Here's a reality that our party faces. There were from my understanding, about 1.3 million people who voted in 2020 that didn't vote in 2024. 1.1 million of them are folks that we consider to be Democrats. And when you put them in focus groups, they'll say things like the Democrats don't fight hard enough. Mm. If they ask to compare us to animals, they'll call us slugs and turtles. they just don't, people aren't viewing the party as folks that throw down. And I think that's an issue if our base isn't showing up for us. The Republicans get this. They're here throwing down, oftentimes going completely off the wagon on a lot of the positions that they'll take. Literally this week, they're sitting in the halls of Congress quoting Hitler and Joseph Goebbels, right? But they're doing everything they can to zhuzh up their base. While we're playing this middle of the road, maybe people will like us if we can out-Republican the other guys. Mm. I think that our party needs to show folks that we stand for something. Mm. And when you do that, we'll be able to start having these people in that triangle that you're talking about, seeing a party that's worth showing up for an election day. When 1.1 million Democrats look up and they say, I could go to the polls, are they worth it? That's a problem, and we have to address that. That's the first point. The next point that I would probably make on that is that we are a party of big and bold ideas historically, right? We're the party that ushered in the New Deal and the Great Society, Medicare, Medicaid, Rural Electrification Act. We're the party that put a man on the moon. Surely we can organize in both rural and urban areas in Texas, okay? That is not a tall order. We as a party should not have limited thinking. Okay, we have to be big and bold with what our ideas are, and that includes in our plans for organizing.
The previous leadership of the Democratic Party, it felt to me, and I may not be accurate about this, but it felt to me was really focusing on winning a statewide office. Where do you start? Local, statewide, federal, anything specific you're looking at?
I think you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right?
That's right. How do you build a pyramid? One block at a time, yeah.
But so of course we want to pick up a statewide, and I think that there are real viable options. We'll have an open attorney general seat to pick up. There's going to be an open comptroller seat. There's going to be an open railroad commissioner seat. Lots of open seats abound, and I think there's some opportunity there. But also, you can't just get lost in this statewide mindset. Most Texans, the vast majority, a super majority of Texans, live in a county with a Democratic county judge.
All right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And so what can we do to make sure we're picking up wins across the state? Commissioners, county commissioners, county judges, city councils, mayors. The Republicans have all these giant PACs that recruit in school boards and city councils. And then you talk to Democrat clubs, and a lot of times they'll say, well, those are nonpartisan races. And we as a party stay out of those. Not anymore. Hmm. I mean, we're here to win elections for Democrats across the state. And so I think you have to walk and chew gum there, too. We can have high, but if you have high quality down ballot candidates, I think that helps up ballot. We've operated also in this idea of top of the ballot is what carries the people below. In districts like mine, when I ran in 2018, we overperformed the top of the ballot, right? In our party, down ballot carries up. Hmm. And so high quality, great people ready to serve their communities.
What is a high quality candidate, though, in the bottom of the
ballot? High quality candidate is a person who's connected to their community, is a person who understands their community, has their finger on the pulse of it, and who, depending on what role they're running for, is a good administrator and is a person that wants to make government work for working people, not dismantle it, not try to figure out how they can just gouge programs away from helping people, but how do you make life easier for people? Life's hard.
And in a good number of these places, though, you may have Democrats who just don't show up to vote because there's not a Democrat running.
Right.
You know, a lot of times in many of these, you know, down ballot seats, the Republican primary chooses the winner in the general because Democrats don't even contest that seat. How important is it to you to get a Democrat on the ballot in all of these seats?
Well, I mean, part of it is that you don't run a Democrat in some of those seats. Another part of it is gerrymandered districts,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
I mean, when you draw lopsided districts on either side, you're going to have a situation where voting is suppressed in a general election because they don't see a point there. So the way you fix it is you throw down and you give people something to be excited about and hope for. We recruited more candidates in 2024 than we had in 2018. Hmm. As a party, we are laser focused on candidate recruitment. We're going to keep doing that. It's my goal to make sure we're contesting every single congressional district in this state. We're going to contest every single statewide in this state. We're going to contest as many legislative seats as we possibly can. But then also down ballots. We have to, our candidate recruitment can't stop at that legislature. It has to dip below it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about money for a moment. You mentioned this earlier in the episode. The Texas Democratic Party has always had trouble raising the amount of money that Republicans have raised. Where do you find that money now?
Well, let's be clear why we've had that challenge. We don't have a handful of billionaires in Cisco, Texas, and Midland, Texas, that will write us checks to buy our votes on things, okay? And we wouldn't take that money if they wanted to, because we're a party of principle, not a party of billionaires.
But you need the money, though.
Well, of course we need the money. And what that means is that we have to make sure we're building a grassroots apparatus that's willing to donate to the party. That means asking people for $5, $10, $25 a month and trying to amplify it as much as we can, in addition to getting some of those big checks. And when you do that, you have operational funds, but then you will also have programmatic funds. Mm-hmm. And we've always kind of laser focused in one thing. Limited thinking, man. That's kind of a problem that I've seen in Democrats. Stop being limited. Maybe it's my millennial in me that I'm just a little bit too hopeful. I came of age in the years of Barack Obama, and hope is just on my heart, right?
What is the reaction you're getting when you're going to these small towns and talking to the Democrats? How do you tell them not to have limited thinking, to think outside the box?
If you go to those small towns, a lot of those Democrats have just kind of, I don't know how... How's profanity on this?
It's a podcast. Go for it.
Daryl,
put this out. Go ahead.
A lot of these Democrats have had the kicked out of them for a long time, right? But they're still getting out of bed every single day and throwing down. I love me some rural Democrats because, I mean, it is tough. They face social repercussions for what they believe. They face business and financial repercussions when they leave, but they're doing it every day because it's the right thing to do. Mm. And so rural Democrats, to me, have a really special spot.
You're one yourself.
Right. Yeah. You spend one summer working on a watermelon farm and you'll move to Dallas too.
That's the episode title right there.
But yeah, I mean, so when I go out there, what I see are Democrats that are chomping on the bit for some leadership. They're chomping, like, what can I do? Like, we were sitting in these rooms writing postcards, because everybody just keeps saying, write some postcards, right? Give me some direction. Give me some data. Tell me who I need to knock to and who I need to identify. And how do we put a strategic plan together that tells them what to do? They're looking for direction. Democrats all over the country are just like, put me in, coach. But no coach is putting them in. And so how do I, the question is, how do I raise enough money to build an apparatus where we can put them in the game? And not always they're volunteers, but we have to have staff that's able to coordinate some of that, right?
I could see how it would be a double-edged sword for you, though, that you might be able to break through to some of these audiences because of who you are and your background. But then on the other side of it, how you might have to convince other people in the party that, hey, guys, I'm qualified to do this. I mean, you're an outsider. You are, you know, a rural guy from East Texas, a Democrat from deep East Texas, and you've been in the private sector all this time. It gives you a totally different perspective, though, but I would imagine that you can break through to some and have to win over others.
Well, let's be real clear. When I was growing up, everybody out in East Texas was a Democrat.
Right. Right.
Because we understood what Democrats did for working people, and then Fox News came into play and started corrupting what people's understandings were that they knew in their heart, was that Democrats were showing up and fighting for farmers and fighting for low-income folks and people that work for a living. But to me, look, this may be a little wonky and may not be fun talking points for the news, but I'll get there. You know, my master's degree is in political management from George Washington. I can talk about political science for a sec. We're a coalition party. We have a group of a lot of different folks that come from different backgrounds with different interests that have a common shared moral thread. That's called a coalition party, okay? Our shared moral thread is that the little guy should have an opportunity to succeed. And our challenge in a messaging standpoint has always been, how is a coalition party going to message to keep everybody happy? It's a very diverse coalition, and it's why everybody is welcome in our party that's willing to respect the other voices at the table. And so I represent kind of a voice that hasn't really been prominent in the party recently. I think that people are interested to see how that plays out, right? But I think all the other voices are still very present in my life and still very present at the table. I want to run an inclusive party that has those folks there with us so that we're being informed and intentional in a lot of the stuff that we do. That's why I think I was able to win with such a large margin, is that I have a track record of doing that.
And so you got an outright majority out of seven candidates for
first
this
round,
job.
Yeah. In the first round.
An outright majority in the first round. I don't think anybody anticipated that. How did that happen?
23 years of relationships. Mm. I straddle this weird line of being an outsider and an insider, which also I think plays to my advantage. I started politics when I was 12 years old. I have lesbian mamas. And when I was 12, there was some Republican bill where they were trying to take kids with same-sex parents out of our homes and put us in foster care. Mm. And it just scared the shit out of me. And I started knocking on doors. I walked into my Democratic headquarters. They taught me how to knock doors and make phone calls and started high school Dems clubs and college Dem clubs. Uh-huh. And they created an activist out of me. I was low-hanging fruit for Republicans, right? But they decided they'd rather, you know, pick on people who aren't like them instead.
This was personal.
Yeah, it was personal. And so, you know, for years, I've been showing up. And, I mean, literally waiting tables and using the last $50 in my bank account to go start a Young Democrats Club in Hardin County, right? Mm-hmm. And when you do that for so long, people start to build good faith in you. They know that you mean what you say, you under-promise, over-deliver, and you show up when they need you. And there's, if I can't, I look at it and you say, man, I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. And you're just honest with people. Instead of this like self-preservation where you walk around, a lot of politicians on both sides do this, where they like always try to act like they're the greatest, they know all the answers, they can solve all the problems, you over-promise, you under deliver, people lose respect for it, and that's why they don't like the system, right? Mm-hmm. To me, you under promise, you over deliver, and I have a good track record doing it. So the people in the SDEC have seen me do that for years, mm-hmm. and they know that as chairman, I'm going to level with them. I'm going to level with the people of Texas and be honest. And sometimes you may not like me being honest with you, mm-hmm. and sometimes it might hurt some feelings, but you know, we as a party have to do a level reset. Because the brand for the Democratic Party it's at an all-time low.
Yeah.
And for somebody like us who are activists, we don't understand how it could happen because we see every day these electeds and these Democrats getting up and throwing down. They're just not messaging it right. We're not organizing the right way. And I'm here to reset it, tell the people of Texas, we acknowledge we've made some mistakes and we're here to do better. I hope you'll give us a chance.
Do you know if you're going to run again next year?
It would be really hard to ever be the chair and not get to go through a single election cycle,
sure.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure I'm going to do that. But the last few days, I've just been bogged down on making this better. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But don't be shocked if I run for reelect. I mean, of course, that would make a lot of sense.
And here's my last question. You know, the golden goose that the Republicans have is this messaging. They have it down. They have AM radio. They have cable news. They have social media. How do you counter that? Grassroots is great, but it seems like the younger voter is on TikTok. You need the influencers to move into the next generation to find that voter. What's your plan?
Yeah, what do you do, millennial?
Well, hang on. Yeah, well, let's make sure we clarify the question that you just said. You said they have AM radio, they have all of this.
Yeah.
Clarifying that, yes, they're billionaire and multimillionaire owners, or donors do, and owners. Right?
Donors and owners,
they're,
right?
Their donors and owners also own those stations, right? So let's call it what it is. It's not like they have some secret sauce.
No.
They've bought the system, okay?
And they're using it, though, for political means.
Well, right, but we need to make sure people understand that the way they're getting mainstream news is that these conservative henchmen have purchased these apparatuses, okay?
It works, though.
And it has worked for them. And so, to answer that question now, I would say as a party, we've been very risk adverse and hesitant on alternative media. I think the one example that's been beaten like a drum and is the Kamala Harris, Joe Rogan example, right? Where maybe you're afraid to go on places that they disagree with you. Well, I go places where people disagree with me all the time. We call it Thanksgiving dinner, right? I mean, when
your family disagrees with you?
When you're a Democrat from East Texas, you know, you're not walking into a room of liberals, okay? And I've got an East Texas family through and through. We're rough and rowdy, just like everybody else out in the Arklatex.
So, are you still invited to Thanksgiving?
Of course. I mean, of course I am.
Some families, though, here in Texas, it doesn't work that way.
That is just, you don't split families up because of politics. You don't find, but what you do is we kind of razz each other. Hmm. You know, it's funny. I'm kind of the token Democrat in the room.
wow.
But here's the thing. I think that even people in my family, I'm not going to name names because I don't want to get them in trouble with their buddies. But like even people in my family look at things like this voucher scam, which just welfare for the well off. And when you look at people in Bowie County or you look at people in Titus County, what private school are you sending that kid to?
Right.
Right. All that, they know what that is. It's another entitlement program for rich folks. And it's going to be at the backs of our kids who are, I mean, our families are, how much more do these billionaires want? Their greed just knows absolutely no bounds. Elon Musk is sitting in the White House right now gouging jobs, social safety net programs. You know what's not getting touched? Any money that goes to Elon Musk. Mm. But all the other folks are getting gouged on it. They're losing their health care. They're losing their pensions. Social Security's next.
Yeah.
Right? And so, I mean, their greed will not stop until it has gobbled every penny out of the pockets of every teacher. It's gobbled every penny out of the pockets of every veteran, out of every working Texan. They see that in this voucher bill. They know what it is. That's why Abbott's going in so hard on it, is because he's been purchased. We've seen those donations, $5 million sure. bucks and largest donations in Texas history. He's been purchased to do what he's got to do. He's a henchman who has marching orders. But people that live in Nacogdoches County and Rusk County and in the Panhandle know that that is not for them. And their kids are going to get a worse education for it. If they have a special needs kid, that kid has no shot after this voucher program passes. And that's what's on the line right now.
You think it's going to pass?
Even I think if it does, the state's in a lot of trouble. And you can look at places like Arizona to prove it. They're bankrupt.
But can Democrats do anything in the House to stop it?
I think Democrats can do a lot. The people who can do the most are people. Yeah. Right? Then it's not about what your state legislatures sure. want. It's about what you want as a person. If you are a person that lives in the Coastal Bend, you know, Aransas County, and you love your public school teacher that your kid sees, because everybody talks about these problems with public schools. It's never their own school. It's always this arbitrary school that just doesn't really exist. If you love your community school, you need to be reaching out to your Republican representatives and letting them know that this ain't going to fly. Because Democrats are going to always stand up to make sure we're lowering taxes for working people, improving your community public schools, and making your streets safer.
This is a more impassioned speech than I've heard from a lot of Democratic candidates.
Yeah, in a long time.
This is another reason. I guess this tacks onto another question you had about the 65. Public schools are my issue. I don't know if you followed my race when I ran for Senate. I was often called a single issue candidate when I overperformed that district, by the way, because you're damn right I was a single issue candidate, because I am sitting here right now. A little boy with farm calloused hands got grabbed by the face by a teacher, and she told me I was smart and stopped acting stupid. Stop acting like you're like you're acting. You're too smart for this, right? And for some people, it sounds stupid, but when you're a kid like me from a town like mine and a family like ours, it means the entire world. And what happens when you get rid of these schools? When you, like, their goal is to stop you from being educated, stop your kids from being educated so they can keep your wages low. It's all about how do these billionaires improve their bottom line. If you don't have a college education, if you don't have a high school education, if you don't have a trade degree, they can pay you less. So let's make your schools worse so that we keep you on assembly lines and keep you in on the farm and keep you in the factories so that your kid can't go to school and be an attorney or be what they want to be with their life. Be a quality welder, be a high quality tradesman and a plumber. Like, they don't want you to have that level of education. That's what this is about. And if we as a party aren't making sure we're clear, well, we just keep walking up and saying vouchers are a scam, vouchers are a scam. They need to understand why it's a scam for people like us. Your schools are going to shut down. Abbott has already shut down schools across this state, especially in suburban Texas, okay? Your schools are going to shut down. Your kids aren't going to have opportunities. This voucher plan has to die.
So if you hear a candidate on the Democratic side say vouchers are a scam, just like that, are you going to be on the phone with them and saying, hey,
up your message a little bit here?
We need to sharpen this.
You need to say vouchers are a scam because.
So you'll be on the phone with them.
Of course. Yeah. I'm on the phone with everybody. It's a compulsive problem. My wife hates it.
You took our call. Yeah, that was mistake number one. My last thing for you is, so you're an under-promiser, okay? Give us a look, though, at 2026. What do we see in Texas for Democrats? We've got big things on the ballot. Do you think you guys can actually walk away with a statewide race, one of these statewide races, with good probability?
Look, we're the underdogs. We are not the favorite to win. We would, if I were betting in Vegas, I think a lot of people would put their money against us. But we have now become a very scrappy party. We have now become a party that is ready to embrace that underdog status and plow forward. I'm lying to you if I'm looking at you telling you, oh, we're going to flip every single race in the state of Texas. I don't know that. I don't even know who our nominees are going to be yet, okay? But what I am here to tell you is that I would hate to be John Cornyn right now. I bet that man's terrified, not just of his primary, but I think he's seen what's the energy that's existing in our party apparatus within the last few days. We're hitting a reset button, and we are serious about it. I am feeling really good about what our prospects are, not just because of what we can accomplish, but I think the electoral wins are going to be on our side as well in 2026 because people, I mean, Donald Trump is now underwater in Texas in his favorability. Who would imagine that? Just 2 months after taking office?
75 days in, yeah.
I think things are blowing in our direction, and now we're going to be equipped to do it. But we only do it if I can generate enough trust in Texas Democrats to know you can go to txdemocrats.org and trust that you can give us $25 a month and it's not going to be misspent. I'm going to do the very best I can, run transparent, accountable operations that will deliver results. That's my goal. And I hope I can make everybody proud.
Well, congrats on the election. Yeah. It is a big job for sure. And thanks for taking our call.
Yeah. I'm excited about
Not
it,
everybody
man.
Does.
Thanks for having me on. I mean, anybody that buys me a beer, I'm here to sit down and hang out. I'm here for it.
Kendall Scudder is the new chairman of the Texas Democratic Party and clearly ready to throw down. Kendall, thanks a lot, man.
Let's do it.